from WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Mass shootings at two mosques in Christchurch rocked New Zealanders to their core. What may have shocked Americans even more is the response of New Zealand's government. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern quickly and emphatically declared that she would not say the name of the shooter.
He is a terrorist. He is a criminal. He is an extremist. But he will, when I speak, be nameless.
And most media outlets have followed suit. It's a stark contrast to the way mass shootings are covered in this country, with shooters' names and stories prominent in the days immediately following a shooting. Does New Zealand's prime minister have science on her side? Jacqueline Schildkraut is associate professor of criminal justice at the State University of New York at Oswego. She's co-author of Mass Shootings, Media, Myths, and Realities, Mass Shootings in America, Understanding the Debates, Causes, and Responses, and now Columbine, 20 Years Later and Beyond, Lessons from Tragedy. Jacqueline, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
The biggest concern with media reporting the perpetrator's name is the possibility of sparking copycats. How strong is the evidence that that actually happens?
You know, the evidence is certainly compelling. It is a newer area of research, but the results have been consistent in terms of the studies that have been conducted, suggesting that there's actually both a short-term contagion effect and also a longer-term copycat effect, such that in the shorter term, we see that the likelihood of another shooting increases with the amount of media coverage within the first 12 to 14 days after a highly publicized attack.
Are there other implications of media coverage, other potential ramifications that we should be thinking about?
Oh, absolutely. There's sort of four big ones to think about. You know, first and foremost is that when these individuals conduct these acts in such a public manner, they are effectively doing it because they want fame and they want notoriety. And in basically covering them and covering them so heavily, they are basically being rewarded for killing other people. At the same time, especially in cases where there's a high level of media interest, you know, Christchurch in New Zealand is certainly a prominent example, but we can look as far back as Columbine. It's signaling to other, you know, like-minded individuals that if you want a lot of attention, then you can kill a lot of people and the media will reward you with an extensive amount of coverage. Also in that same sort of mindset, you know, the extensive media coverage can also, especially with something like with the Christchurch, where the perpetrator live streamed his killings, it's also providing a template for those other like-minded individuals. But I think the biggest thing that we have to think about is what does it do to the people who are impacted? And not just impacted about that specific shooting, but every time there's another shooting, it re-triggers communities that have been impacted. I'm actually out in Colorado right now, and from talking to people that I'm friends with out here, there's a lot of Columbine survivors that have been impacted by the New Zealand shooting and the amount of coverage it was receiving.
And what about the broader public, not those directly impacted by these shootings, but is there an impact in terms of attitudes towards these shootings, attitudes toward violent crime in general that changes with the media coverage of these events?
You know, it's hard to say if it's specifically the way in which the media cover it or more specifically the amount of which the media cover it. You know, there's certainly a desensitization element such that people don't really have the same outward visceral reactions. I think people still feel bad, right? They don't want to see other people being harmed. But I think, you know, the shock that we all felt 20 years ago watching Columbine unfold live on television isn't really there. I can remember last year when the YouTube shooting happened, the shooting at the YouTube headquarters happened, and I happened to be watching it actually on Facebook. And I remember seeing in the comments where somebody said, well, you know, it has been 3 weeks since we had a shooting, you know, we should have expected this. And I think, you know, the amount of coverage that these events receive certainly play into attitudes like that.
Jacqueline Schildkraut, in an article that you wrote for Vox after the Parkland shootings, you explicitly refused to name the perpetrator. You've even refused to be part of media coverage that names or shows footage of a mass shooting perpetrator. And there have been multiple campaigns by victims' families going back several years, by academic experts like yourself, even the FBI, to change the way that the American media covers mass shootings. Why hasn't it changed?
You know, I think there's a little bit of contention. You know, as I mentioned, the area of research is somewhat newer. I mean, when we look at, you know, the the time that this has been going on. And I think that there's sort of this concern over the requests that all of us are making is an infringement upon First Amendment rights. And even news consumers say, well, we have a right to know. And no one is denying them the information of, you know, what happened in the shooting, even who committed it. But, and, you know, when people want their name in lights and you're literally putting their actual name in lights, so to speak, you know, that's really where that reward component comes in. They want their name known. And so by denying them that and removing that incentive, that's what we're calling for. You can say the perpetrator. It's the same two words as somebody's first and last name. So you can still say the perpetrator walked into this building and did this. And you're giving everybody all of the information they normally would have gotten. You're just not rewarding the killer.
So what would, in your mind, based on the body of science that we do have at this point, what would media coverage done well look like?
You know, I think we did see some definite strides with Christchurch, especially with, of course, the New Zealand media. The No Notoriety campaign, which I actually work for, was started by Tom and Karen Teeves after their son Alex was murdered in the Aurora, Colorado theater shooting. And, you know, the No Notoriety campaign, which is one of the most prominent campaigns in this area, you know, it's not calling for a complete blackout, which I think is also a misconception. It's calling for a limited use. If you have a situation like Parkland where the perpetrator walks out of the building and everybody needs to know who they are so that that individual can be captured and can't harm anybody, then absolutely plaster their face and their name everywhere. But once that person is apprehended, it should be limited. You know, talking about things like not giving prominent coverage, so not live breaking news where it's the first story, not, you know, front page coverage with their face really large, you know, kind of burying those stories in a sense to less prominent placement, not repeating their name over and over. We certainly understand you can't have a story about a shooter or a shooting without naming them once. But for instance, in New Zealand, one of the things that the judge did when the shooter came into the court for his initial appearance is the judge ordered that any photographs taken could be used only if the shooter's face was blurred out, which I thought was a very, you know, interesting idea. But then I was reading an article in one of our media sources here in the U.S., and while they utilized that photo, they then used his name 15 times. Mm-hmm. And so it's that kind of imbalance, I think, that's really problematic.
We have seen with this shooting in New Zealand much less of the perpetrator's name. Doing a Google search, I think I found one Australian outlet that actually put the name in a headline, and that was about it. And so obviously it is possible to cover an event without using the name copiously. But Jackie Schildkraut, you've done research showing that, in fact, these are changes that the American public would welcome.
Absolutely. We did a survey of a random sample of news consumers, and we found that, interestingly, when it comes to attitudes and perceptions about mass shootings and, you know, where they're formed, that the public really holds the media responsible. Of course, we know that there are, you know, obviously a growing number of people who are directly and even indirectly impacted by these events, myself included. But we also know that, you know, there's just so many other people who are, you know, getting this vicariously through the media. And, you know, that's the only source of information that they have is whatever gets put on television or social media. Of course, social media is a lot harder to control or, you know, regulate than newspapers or mainstream media because it's being conducted by a ton of different individuals. But not only do they hold the media responsible for those attitudes, but a lot of people, you know, more than 7 out of 10 people say, we'll still tune into this coverage, even if you don't gratuitously show the person's picture or say their name over and over again. And I think, you know, at this point, it's also a case of giving the people what they want, and it will still turn out beneficial for the media and also now for the public.
Of course, this case, as you just mentioned, has challenged some of that idea that the media can control all of this because the perpetrator in this case live streamed his actions on Facebook. It was viewed something like 4,000 times, I think Facebook has said, before they actually found it and took it down. I mean, there's a complex landscape to be navigated in terms of how this information is controlled or disseminated at this point.
Absolutely. And I can remember seeing an article in the first few days after the shooting where I think in the first 24 hours, Facebook intercepted about 1.5 million copies where people were trying to share or post, you know, that video. And, you know, if you think about it, what is really to gain, you know, in terms of sharing that video? There's not a lot of investigative value for the average citizen. And at the end of the day, you're watching people get slaughtered. You know, I understand that there's a, you know, sort of a morbid curiosity or an interest because we don't get to see them. But if we all take a step back and say, what are we really standing to gain out of that video being shared? The reality is that we're, again, giving notoriety to a person who walked into a church or a mosque and committed a very, very violent act.
Jacqueline Schildkraut, in addition to the fact that New Zealand's prime minister refused to say the name of the perpetrator, New Zealand's parliament, within a matter of days, had committed to a ban on assault rifles and possibly other changes to New Zealand's gun laws. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as much as we can talk about the role of the media and the responsibility of the media, I think we have to address also the role of gun access. How important is gun access versus, you know, information about these shootings and this possible copycat effect?
You know, I think if we're being honest, the reality is that if individuals are determined to carry out this type of attack, they're going to figure out a way to do this. And so it's not to suggest that we shouldn't have a conversation about firearms in this country. I would never be so brazen as to suggest that, but we've been having the same conversation for 20 years since Columbine, and nothing has happened. And I think if we look at Columbine as sort of this, you know, place where we can start trying to understand that conversation. You had two high school kids who at the time that they were able to acquire their weapons, they were both under the legal age to even have a weapon in their possession. So, you know, if you're talking about criminals, we know that criminals don't follow the law. So what other conversations can we be having? The reality is that, you know, mass shootings are very complex, multifaceted and multidimensional issues. And so to isolate, you know, the no notoriety side of it or to isolate the gun side of it is very short-sighted because you're missing out on so many other problems.
Jacqueline Schildkraut is Associate Professor of Criminal Justice at the State University of New York at Oswego and author of multiple books about mass shootings. Jacqueline, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.